Monday, July 6th, the first show that we're going to do in the sweltering month of July 2020, the year of the nonstop Twilight Zone. Adam here with a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. On the line with me, from a state that's always pretty hot in Florida, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, to discuss politics and whatever else might float our boat. How are you today on this nice, warm, summery day, Ron?
I'm very hot.
Well, that's good.
No, it's a hot day as usual.
Well, it's good. It's good to be hot. And
depends how you define hot, yeah.
Yeah, it depends how we define hot. You know, people used to say Alaska, coldest state, hottest governor, but that was a different kind of hot. We're talking
about... Yeah, but talking about Alaska, look at Siberia with the highest temperatures ever recorded. So I'm sure Alaska's really got high temperatures now, you know, much more than one would think they would.
Yeah, well, I thought Donald said that there was no global warming, but maybe there is, so who knows?
Well, he's not a science expert.
Yeah, of course, you know, there are things I agree with Donald on and things I don't agree with Donald on. Not just silly things like, you know, Melania's pretty and silly things like that that are really kind of inconsequential. We have determined that this show, Ron, is going to be a no-mask zone and a no-corona zone. We're not going to talk about corona. We're not going to talk about masks. For those who follow me on social media, I think my opinions are very well established. Ron and I would like to, I think we both would agree, we'd want to put a mask on the entire situation because it's really getting out of hand. It's dividing the country, and I'm getting really kind of tired of it. And I'm also tired of fake pandemics, but that's all I'm going to say. I think people who follow me know what I think, and so we're just going to move on. We're going to talk about politics. As you know, Ron, in less than 4 months, if I'm not mistaken, we have a presidential election. We have...
Yes, we do, and it's the most important, as I wrote, since 1940, I think.
We have Donald J. Trump with his running mate of Michael Pence. Not sure what Mike's middle name is. I'm not going to look it up, but whatever it is, Michael Pence.
Richard.
Sorry?
Richard is his
name. Oh, Michael
yeah.
Richard Pence. That's a good name. So, Donald against Michael versus Joe Biden and a to-be-determined female vice president. He's promising a female.
Yeah, I wanted to mention about Michael Richard Pence. The Secretary of State is Michael Richard Pompeo, and I wrote an article a while back talking about the two Michael Richards that have a great impact on Trump. Both Pence and Pompeo, their middle name is Richard. I thought that's really weird. Michael Richard in both cases.
Yeah, they both kind of anagram to MRP, Mr. P. So, you know, Mr. President, because yes. I suspect if Donald wins, and I do believe that he will, Mike Pence, of course, would take over. He's in his early 60s, seems pretty healthy, but kind of concerned about Donald's health. He certainly seems vibrant, and he says he's a vibrant young man, but he looks kind of pudgy to me. Golfing has some exercise value, but it's not exactly a strenuous type of activity. Plus, it seems like he's on the golf cart a lot, and his caddy, of course,
yes, he doesn't walk.
Carries his clubs. He likes Big Macs and other food that isn't very healthy. But, you know, some people, they live a long life despite their less than healthy lifestyle. You never quite know. But I am a little concerned about Donald's mortality. Mike Pence, I mean, I think you'd agree, Ron, I know neither of us is a big fan. There are many things I like about Mike Pence, but my general opinion is, I would say, more to the negative. He does seem very healthy. Early 60s, a good age, I think, for a president. And again, with Donald's, what I believe, likely victory in November, we may see a President Pence at some time, or Donald just might resign. Who knows? I think we'd also agree that if Mike Pence does ascend to the office and be, I guess, number 46, he's likely to pick a female and B, a moderate as VP. And of course, you know who that means, Nikki Haley. But there are some other people that might come to mind. But bottom line is whatever
Nikki
happens.
Nikki Haley has not had the greatest press lately. She's definitely declined in people's esteem. But, you know, you never know, of course, yeah.
And, you know, she's easy on the eyes, and that kind of helps. Cause you
that
look,
part, yes, but,
you look
but
at,
other than that.
Yeah, you look at Mike's wife, and, you know, you kind of lose your dinner. But that's how it goes sometimes. But we'll find out. Whatever happens, it'll be a surprise. Neither Ron nor I will find that the result is what we expected, and it'll make for a lot of interesting talk shows. That
well,
is for
actually,
sure.
You know, what happened this past couple of days, maybe neither will win Biden or Trump. Maybe it'll be Kanye West.
Well, that would certainly be different. I wouldn't.
He announced his candidacy. At least that's what's been said, but I don't know whether he meant it, but I thought this is crazy.
Honestly, I think Bozo the Clown is a better candidate than any of the three or four.
Yes, I would agree with you. Oh, my God.
At least he'd be funny.
Before the Kardashians in the White House, can you imagine that?
But, well, we, you know, elect a clown, get a circus, pretty much says it all. Before we get into the show, Ron, we're going to talk about Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. As well as his contributions to the History News Network. I think it's .org and .com. And that should pretty much keep us busy for quite
actually,
a while.
HNN.org. HNN.org it is, yeah.
We want to pay tribute to a very outstanding newscaster, reporter, and yes, like almost every celebrity, friend of this radio station, a occasional guest of Interviewer to the Stars, Scott Spears, and a native Ohioan with connections to the great towns of Lima, and I like to say I've been to Lima, you know, Lima Bean, and the great city of
Lima. Is Lima?
Lima is in Peru, silly. Lima is in Ohio.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Lima is in Peru.
I was Lima.
But this is called Lima.
Yes, my gosh, what a wonderful guy he was, yes.
And, of course, the great city of Akron, known for LeBron James, but also known for the late, great Hugh Downs, passing away at the ripe old age of 99 years old.
And 4.5 months.
And I think we can both agree, Ron, we may not agree with all of his politics, but a great man, great reporter, great voice, proud to be an Ohioan, which he is a native of the area. He was living in Arizona, where it's nice and warm with lots of rattlesnakes and prickly cactus. But Hugh Downs, Ron, great reporter, loved him on 2020. Lived a long life.
Great. He was such a nice guy. Always had a nice smile. Always decent the way he came across. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, always very gracious on this station. And speaking with Interviewer to the Stars, Scott Spears, I imagine you've caught some of the interviews, Ron, and very impressive. Still had that great voice. Love his voice. Presence that the guy had, missed greatly, and I was very saddened to see that. And
but I got to say, if you reach 99, you can't call that a tragedy. That's the one thing.
No, he lived a long life.
How much longer can one live, you know?
And 99 years of changing the world, and may he rest in peace. Great man, and we invite listeners, go to the Scott Spears section on our website, WWGH1071.com. On the Scott Spears section, there's a anchor link, we call it. That's Tech Talk. It just means it goes to a certain part of the page where it says celebrity interviews, and just look for Hugh Downs or just do a search. He's there, and that would be 45 minutes of radio listening that your ears and brain will thank you for.
So, yeah, also, Carl Reiner passed away at 98. Yes. So this is really the era of really, really old people leaving us, you know.
Yes, also Carl Reiner. A multi-talented person. I really don't know if Scott's ever talked to Carl Reiner. I don't want to say he hasn't because I get surprised by whom that guy has on the show. So I'm not going to say I don't think so, but I really don't know. I would say more familiar with his son, Rob Reiner, who played Mike or Meathead on All in the Family.
Yes.
A great actor, director, again, political activist. I wouldn't say I agree with most of his activism, as he's very far to the left, as his father was. But I respect him for being outspoken, being intelligent, and playing kind of a delightfully objectionable character on All in the Family, and which is,
yes,
I would
was.
Say, the greatest TV show of all time, at least the greatest sitcom that I still watch, I still love, still idolize the entire cast and behind-the-scenes people on the show. Norman Lear, the creator, still around, and he's well in his 90s. What a great man. Carl Reiner.
Yeah, talk about age. I wanted to mention Norman Lloyd is 105 and a half. Can you believe that?
Man, he's been on with Scott Spears. So.
And Olivia de Havilland hit 104 this month.
Hey, Olivia Havilland, he may be 104, Ron. She's still pretty hot, I tell you. She has not lost.
She's amazing. Is, 104, and he's 105.
Yeah, you see Olivia de Havilland. Really, she looks pretty good. Very classy.
Yes.
I mean, just a very classy lady. She's always been classy, but just at 104... She just exudes class. You look at her and say, well, that's like American royalty.
And she was always assertive as an actress. She got away with things other actresses couldn't get away with. She spoke up, and people let her do what she wanted.
Yeah,
she's amazing
paved the
woman.
Way.
She really is.
For, again, like some singers have, Helen Reddy, you probably know, I'm a big fan of hers. My mom loved her. She was the first woman's liberation supporting singer who made no bones about how she felt. She made no apologies. She said, if you don't like my women's lib philosophies, then don't listen to my music. And, you know, she sang great song, I Am Woman. She spoke out as an activist and great, great singer. I mean, still around, and a legacy that has, I think, affected many female singers to this day. Libby de Havilland, again, also, you know, part activist, part outstanding actress, and, you know, still looking pretty good. And I think the class that she exudes will be with us as an influence forever. And may she have...
Yeah, talk about older people. How about, and we mentioned her before, how about Roberta McCain, John McCain's mother, who's 108 and a half?
Yes. happy birthday coming up, Roberta. 109 big ones.
It's February 7th, so she's halfway to, but 108 and a half almost.
Oh,
unbelievable, you know?
Roberta McCain, yeah, pretty cool. You know, when you reach 108 and a half, I can't imagine living to be 100. That'd be awfully cool, though. I really can't wait to be 100. Be kind of a cool
age. But, you know, the problem is I've known a couple of people in their mid-90s, even couples in their mid-90s, and they say everybody they ever knew that was around their age has died. They have nobody left. That's the problem. When you live too long, everybody you've known who's around your age, except for much younger people, is gone. So it's a little depressing when you think about
it. You're only as old as you feel. So every day you wake up, it's a victory. And we
and of course, if you reach 100, God forbid your children could die before you in their 60s or 70s. That's the horror of all, that you lose your children, you know?
Yeah, it's very sad to lose a child. And
yes.
It's sad when that happens. And again, every day you wake up.
One more person I want to talk about, Betty White, is going to be 99 in January. Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? I'm sure.
Yeah, Betty White, I mean, you talk about someone everybody likes. How could you not like Betty White? In fact, you know, Ron, anyone who doesn't like Betty White should serve a month in prison, don't you? I mean, you should. If you're not intelligent enough. If you're not appreciative enough of, you talk about royalty, of someone like Betty White, I think
that people were checking in on her because she is 98, but she seems to be doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, she still looks good. Seems like she's gotten a little bit shorter, but still has that great smile, still wears her makeup really well, always looks classy, and still
and
funny.
That show Hot in Cleveland a few years ago, she was hysterical, wasn't she?
Yeah, just a talent. And keep in mind, she's a lot more intelligent than Rose Nyland or Sue Ann Nivens. Married to great game show host Alan Ludden. And you know, you see her on a game show, you realize she only played Rose Nyland. She was a lot more intelligent in real life. But still beautiful, still funny. That's something that she exudes in person and in the many characters that she's played on the small screen. So, yeah, Betty White, I don't know anybody who doesn't at least like her. I think most people, like myself, idolize her. And if you don't, well, I think you should probably go to jail for 30 days because you probably aren't intelligent enough to share the world with us. That's how I see
it. Actually, I know someone who doesn't like, I haven't spoken to many years, who doesn't like Betty White. And he thinks that she's obnoxious with her humor. And I thought, what's the matter with you?
She's not obnoxious. Betty White is, I mean, to me, she's kind of squeaky clean. That's part of the image. She can be clean.
Well, but she's outspoken. And this particular person didn't like her being so outspoken whenever she spoke up on anything. But I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I may not agree with all of her animal rights and other stuff. I think she may go a little overboard, but not a big deal. She says what she feels. She's passionate, and she's open-minded. And again, a lot smarter than Sue Ann Nivens or Rose Nyland, I can assure you of that. And always good for a laugh. A versatile actress. You know, absolutely, she's still beautiful. I mean, you look at Betty White when she was in her 20s and 30s. My goodness, was she a knockout? No question.
She's had, I think, the longest career in television. She goes back to the 1940s, you know. She really has been there since a very young age, you know.
Yeah, and Mary Tyler Moore, I never quite understood. You know, she was interested in Lou Grant and, you know, Ed Asner, great actor. Again, I certainly take issues with a lot of his political beliefs, and he's been a very gracious guest of Scott's. you know, smart people can agree to disagree. But he never was known for his looks. That was kind of part of his act. He kind of looked older than his years, and, you know, he didn't really get jobs due to be attractive, just to kind of looking like this boss, who, like many TV characters, was much tougher on the outside than he was on the inside. Yeah. But on the show, Mary Tyler Moore, Sue Ann Nivens, was always chasing after Lou Grant, and after Lou got divorced, why wasn't Lou interested? I mean, you talk about Beauty and the Beast. I would be very flattered if I looked like Ed Asner and someone like Betty White was interested in me. So I never quite understood that, but that's TV for you. Again, it was only a show, but a lot of reality in that program. So anyway, Ron, on your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, we encourage our listeners to peruse it, bookmark it, and if you don't agree with it, throw a rotten egg at it, because that's okay, you know. We do advocate free speech. On the 4th of July, Ron, you wrote about a topic that certainly is of interest to me and many people. There's no question. And again, we're talking about both candidates. Both Donald and Joe Biden have cognitive issues. I think even Joe's biggest supporters, and you would probably be one of those, Ron, would agree, Joe has early stage Alzheimer's or dementia or a similar condition. Donald Trump, I'm not sure if he has one of those conditions, but again, even his biggest supporters would agree that he is a bit of a whack job. I don't know the way to say it. He's a bit of a nutcase.
Yes, I agree with that 100%.
Now, Understand, nutcase isn't necessarily bad. I'm a little nutty, and I say normal people are boring. And if you want to be president, how could you possibly be normal? How could a normal person, Ron, ever want to be president of the United States of America? Maybe that's kind of the thing with Barack Obama. He seemed just a little too normal. It's like this very normal guy, this law professor, this guy who's prim and proper, but I mean, he can tell a joke at times. I wouldn't call him particularly funny, you know, not as funny as Reagan, but he did have a bit of a lighter side to him. Why would he even want to be president of the United States? I really never understood that. But Donald Trump, I mean, you know, he's a nutcase, and that can be part of the charm. And that is one thing.
Other characters. Yeah, like Lyndon Johnson.
I mean, I think you would agree, Ron. That's one thing that we find appealing about the guy, is that he is a little crazy. But, I mean, maybe he's a little too crazy, and maybe the craziness can be dangerous, and that's one thing that you've brought up. And whether it's just a fun, playful craziness, I mean, and Ronald Reagan also liked that, too. Great sense of humor. You know, we agree on that one. Has Donald Trump kind of overdone that? Well, that would be a topic of discussion. So anyway, on the 4th, Ron, you write about the cognitive defects in Donald versus Mr. Sniffy, Joe Biden. President Donald Trump is attempting to convince voters that former VP Joe Biden has cognitive defects that make him unqualified to be president. This is laughable, as it is when Donald Trump has clear cognitive deficits. He has demonstrated this by his language and speaking in public and on Twitter. It's clear to anyone with an open mind that Trump is dangerously mentally ill and unstable, and that he has no ethics, morality, common decency, empathy, compassion, or dignity, only concerned about what he can gain from others. He is a racist, nativist, misogynist, has fake religiosity. That's a great word, religiosity. I love words. And supports anti-Semites and homophobes. Now, we've talked about this before, Ron, and we don't necessarily agree, but why do you think Donald Trump is a racist? Can you give an example, or what exactly can you say to someone who, let's say someone who just moved here and is maybe considered, you know, maybe here just on a student visa, doesn't know much about the United States, and respects maybe one of your students, for example, if you have students that are foreigners and they don't know the country like you and I do, and you tell the students, well, you know, our president, Donald Trump, he is a racist, and the person might not even know what a racist is. Well, a racist is someone who believes that people of certain races, and usually refers to black people, but not necessarily, are inferior.
It could be any group, because he has made statements against Hispanics and blacks and Asian Americans, all of them, and Muslims, that I consider to be racist.
If I were a student
like
of yours,
George
Ron,
Wallace,
and I were from, you know, a country
George
where
Wallace on steroids.
Yeah, and I didn't really know much about it, and I said, well, Dr. Feynman, I've heard other people also say Donald Trump is a racist. He's said he's not a racist. Other people have said he's not a racist.
Well, but the thing is, whenever he something he's projecting. He says, I'm not a racist, which means he is. He does that all the time with everything. He says things about others. He talks about Nancy Pelosi being a whack job, and he's looking in the mirror at himself, is what I say.
Right.
He's projecting.
But you would also want to explain to that person, Ron, let's say your teacher, that many people say they're not a racist. I say I'm not a racist. I don't think you think I'm a racist. I mean, I know no. I'm not. I don't think you're a racist. And you said, you'll say you're not a racist. And I know, yes, Donald Trump says he's not. And you know, you say he's lying.
No, I'm saying it, but I'm not a racist. I don't go around talking about it. But you know, when he talks about, like, the times he's talking about, you know, about my black person or my, you know, the things he says and the way he tweets and the policies he pursues are racist. They really are.
Could you give, you know, just in 30 seconds, just pretend that I'm one of your students, a foreign student, why you believe Donald Trump is a racist? Can you give an example or just something that would provide convincing evidence?
Well, when he came down in Trump Tower and started off his announcement for president by attacking people who are Mexican right away, that's not the way to start something, to start a campaign, and also to antagonize and create hostility with our neighbor that shares a large boundary of 2,000 miles. That's just the beginning. But then he's also worked against civil rights. He's worked against he's talked about Kung Flu and made comments about Asians that are unacceptable. He has pursued policies that undermine Native American rights in Minnesota with that pipeline. And that's just a few examples. And also the people around him, many of them, have pursued policies that are anti-civil rights.
Let's get to misogynist. I love that word, misogynist. And the reason was my family and I used to play this game called Probe, which is like Wheel of Fortune, where you would make a word and try to guess it. And my dad would make misogyny, and I'd say, what? That's an interesting word, because my dad was like myself and loved words, as my mom did. And
I got to admit that before Trump came along, I don't think I knew what that word meant. I had to look it up like 5 years ago. I didn't know.
That's, what you know, it meant. You dad was an attorney time, with a very good vocabulary. He said, well, misogyny means the act of hatred of women. Okay, well, I'm not a misogynist. I think being a misogynist or possessing misogyny is a bad quality, but it's a very good word for a game because it has a weird spelling, has a G-Y-N-Y at the end, so it'll kind of throw you off. So misogynist means what used to be called, you know, a male chauvinist pig. That's what they called it back in the 70s, speaking about Helen Reddy and other female activists. So we'll just replace misogynist, Ron, with male chauvinist pig, because that's what I'm used to calling it, and that's kind of a funny name. So why do you think that Donald Trump is a male chauvinist pig?
Well, I think his comments about women, about their looks or their weight, when he certainly has problems with his own looks and weight, also the mistreatment of women throughout his life with his cheating on his wives and having tons of people he's been involved with, and that tape, you know, that we learned about during the 2016 campaign. And just generally the way he looks down on women, like notice he might be critical of Cuomo or, let's say, the governor of Washington State, but he talks about the Michigan governor, that woman. He doesn't even give her the decency to give her name, Whitmer, and his comments about Pelosi and others. There's so many examples of him probably having the most scandalous love life, more than Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton didn't go around saying things. He might have done it, but he didn't say the kind of
speaking of Bill Clinton or Slick Willie, he cheated on his wife in office, and he lied about it. We're not sure if Donald has cheated on Melania in office. I don't understand why someone who looks like Donald Trump married to someone who looks like Melania would ever possibly cheat on her, but you know, whatever floats your boat, you know.
But you got to remember, she's 50 now. She's not quite what she was years ago. When you're 50 and woman, you don't look like you do at 30 or 40. And honestly, he has women around him, younger women, who look just like his daughter Ivanka. And I really can't prove it, but I'm willing to bet one day we'll find out stories about his philandering while in the White House. So I don't see him as being any different than Bill Clinton in that regard.
So do you think that Bill Clinton, because he wasn't faithful, now understand Hillary, although she's intelligent and has many good qualities, certainly doesn't have what Melania does in the looks department. That isn't everything, but, you know.
Brains, she certainly does. Yeah.
I'm saying there are many great qualities she has, including intelligence, just being interesting. But, you know, I would say if you were to put the two together, I think everybody, including yourself, would agree Melania is the better looking specimen.
Well, I would say this, that I think that that Hillary, when she was First Lady of Arkansas, did not look very good, you know, when she was really young. But then she did have an overdue, and I don't think she was all that unattractive while First Lady, but years earlier, no, she wasn't.
No,
but
I think she's kind of average looking. I mean, I don't think she's unattractive. She's average looking. She was better looking, I think, yeah, when she was, you know, 40 or 50, but bottom line
is... When you're,
yeah,
okay, just, you don't look the same. With me.
As I've said before, I don't understand how Donald Trump, I mean, he was better looking when he was younger. He's, you know, not really aging well.
Yet.
But a lot of it is just he's just looked kind of out of shape and kind of worn out. And that hair, the orange hair, I never quite understood that. But if he was being married to someone who looks like Melania, and even her detractors will agree, she's pretty good looking. I mean, I'm not sure how much surgery she's had, but she still looks pretty good in my eyes. And why would he cheat on someone like that? I mean, who knows? But you take a look
because he doesn't respect women, is what I would argue. He's to his conquests.
Bill Clinton, we know he cheated on Hillary in office, and first he lied about it. Does that make him a misogynist, or are the circumstances different?
He's a misogynist, but he doesn't talk about it like the kind of things that Trump. You know, negative things about women in public. He might have in private, but he didn't do the kind of, you know, stuff that Trump does on Twitter and in making statements. So I think being a misogynist, he is, but he's a quiet misogynist. He's not outspoken like Trump is.
Okay, well, just asking. I mean, because
who's not a misogynist? Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I would agree.
He didn't even touch anybody. George H.W. Bush was accused in his wheelchair of touching a woman's bottom a few years ago, but nobody's ever accused Carter of anything.
Yeah, I would agree. Jimmy Carter, he's just a little too nice, and that's the problem with him. I don't. Again, Donald Trump, kind of the other way. Now, I think in person, Donald Trump probably would be a pretty likable guy, but in office, yeah, he's an intense person. He's high strung. That's just how he is. And Carter, like Obama, much more laid back. And is that good? Is
it's
it
about Carter? He's 95 and 9+ months now. October 1st, he'll be 96. Isn't that amazing?
You also indicate that Donald Trump is a nativist. So first, Ron, tell us, what does nativist mean, and tell us why you believe Donald Trump is a nativist.
Nativist is a person who's anti-immigrants. And yet his own parents, his own family, not his parents, his own family came from overseas. But the fact is that he works, you know, he's trying to end all immigration to the United States. He's cut it back dramatically. And that is the death knell of a country, because we need immigration, because immigrants add so much to America.
So you don't believe only that Donald Trump is against illegal immigration. You and I are both against illegal immigration. I think we agree on that. Just how it's manifested is a little bit different. And Donald Trump is obviously against that, but you think it goes further. Donald Trump is against legal immigration.
He's against legal immigration, except if it's from Europe, old Europe. But he doesn't want it from Africa, Asia, Latin America, or the Middle East. I think that's clear. Yes.
How can you make that determination? Do you have anything you can tell us that you believe illustrates that point?
Well, his statements about the groups from those areas, he doesn't say that about people from Europe, if you notice. He does not say that.
Just asking, you know, this is where I'm going to, maybe a little bit like Scott Spears, delineate, analyze what you say and ask for an opinion. And we invite our listeners. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Well, send us an email. Ron's contact information is on his blog. Follow him on Facebook under The Progressive Professor, or feel free to send me an email on our famous, multifaceted private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.
Now, I want to mention about fake religiosity. He doesn't go to church. He has no interest in religion. He doesn't care about religion. He's made statements about the fact that he doesn't feel need to ever confess to God any faults, and that's crazy. And he just does what he has to do to attract the evangelical right. And yet even they are backing away from him now. Many of them are disillusioned with him. But to me, he's really fake religiosity.
Now, Ron, I don't go to church. I don't admit things to God. But it's different because I don't claim to be religious. I don't claim, you're saying, I don't claim the things that Donald Trump does. I make it perfectly clear. I believe in God. I'm spiritual, but I'm not a religious person. That's the difference,
same
right?
With me.
So it's not a case
of supporting anti-Semites. Yes, he's favorable to Israel, but he has indeed had the backing of people like Richard Spencer and David Duke. and he has talked about them being both sides in Charlottesville were equal when one side was anti-Semitic. So, I mean, to me, he's, I'm not saying he is an anti-Semite. I said he supports anti-Semites who support him. The same with homophobia, what he's done on gay and lesbian issues.
You mentioned Biden is not a racist, nativist, misogynist, nor does he have fake religiosity. He is strongly in favor of the Jewish people and the rights of gays, lesbians, and transgender people. He is of great character.
He's the one that promoted the idea of gay rights before even Obama spoke up on it, which I found interesting back in 2012.
One thing we do agree on is we really like his wife. I admired Dr. Jill Biden. A professor like yourself, that she still professed, or she did professoring, whatever the word is, while she was second lady under the Barack H. Obama administration. I actually would say, and many people have said this, Ron, she's more qualified to be president than he is. I've heard people say that, and I actually believe that.
But she's younger. She's younger than him, yeah.
And just like with Michelle Obama, and, you know, I've changed my tune on her a little bit. Again, I'm not her biggest fan, but I have more of a positive opinion about her now, and I also would say she may have been more qualified than Barack was, but I don't think she's interested.
Well, interestingly, some people are still talking about her running with Joe Biden, although apparently she won't, but the argument I've had people tell me is that if she was the running mate for vice president, he would win such a massive victory that it would ensure his victory.
I think it would help, and, you know, it might influence my vote, which we discussed last show. It might. I'd have to think about it. But I really think she'll be offered the job. I think she probably has been, but I think she said no. But she might be good for a cabinet position. Just don't believe what people say, because how many times...
not want to be vice president. Yeah.
How many times did Hillary say she didn't want to be president and she ran? So you can't trust these people, the whole
thing. Who thought that she would accept a cabinet position? But looking back, if Hillary had not been Secretary of State and had stayed in the Senate and still been in the Senate when 2016 came up, I don't think she would have had the trouble she had, because she couldn't have had the Benghazi issue, which was overdone, brought up against her, because she wouldn't have been the Secretary of State. So I think that was a blunder. If she had stayed in the Senate, even with a record in the voting, she would have probably been better off in 2016, less to attack her on.
We are speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Adam being I, and the professor being Dr. Ronald Fineman, who's on the phone with me from sunny and hot Florida. He writes a blog called theprogressiveprofessor.com, and let's go back to his entry on last Thursday, July 2nd, civil rights anniversaries in July and August remind us of what is unfinished. Again, we're not discussing corona or masks on this show, just to let folks know. We're going to talk about his blogs and some other political issues, because I am a bit masked out and I'm coroned out, and I'd like to put a whole mask on that whole situation, but it ain't going to happen, so we move forward. On July 2nd, 64, I was like 5 weeks old then, so gaga googie was about all I could say back then. Mommy, change my diaper. Well, I couldn't really talk yet, but that's probably what I would have said. President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, outlawing segregation in public places, employment, and education based on race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. And that certainly was a good step. Johnson, a year later, signed the Voting Rights Act, outlawing racial discrimination in voting. That's a little upsetting, Ron. So I was alive. I wasn't very old, but I was around. And black people could not vote. Is that correct? When I was born, black people were not allowed to vote?
In the South, we're talking about, in the South, they'd been denied the right to vote. Not in the North, but in the South, there'd been all kinds of barriers to prevent them from voting since the late 19th century.
You know how much I love geography. Now, the South, I mean, how you define the South depends. So let's say Alabama, that's obviously a southern state. So.
Yeah, the Confederate South, the Confederate States of America, some of the states around there, like Oklahoma and also Missouri and Kentucky, which were not part of the Confederacy. And Oklahoma wasn't even a state yet, of course.
So in Alabama, for example, when I was born, a black person was not allowed to vote. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there was bloodshed and violence in Alabama, as you know, Birmingham riots, you know, with the police going against the demonstrators in 63 and all that. Yes, and George Wallace was the governor.
This is interesting, too, as we talk about.
Have a Donald Trump like Wallace in the White House. Yeah.
Now, black, does that include people who are mixed? What about people who are like an eighth or a quarter black? How do they know if you're black? Because you can't always tell by looking at somebody, especially if they're mixed. And I know we've talked about that before.
There was less of that mixed race than now, by far.
Exactly.
But also, they had to prove by their parents and grandparents if they had a black relative. There were people who only had one black relative, maybe one eighth, but that was enough to bar them from voting in southern states.
So when you register to vote, if you look like you might have had some African ancestry, being Western African ancestry, would they kind of ask you to prove that you're 100% white, or what exactly did they do? Okay.
Yes, they had to prove who your ancestors were, your parents, your grandparents, and others. If you had one black relative, even if you looked very white, that was enough to bar you. Plus, there were poll taxes that was also outlawed by the 24th Amendment to the Constitution in 1964, where you didn't have to pay a tax to vote. But for all those years, poll taxes were required. There were so-called white primaries, where the Democrats were the only party, and they wouldn't allow blacks to vote in the primary. So even if they somehow could get around, and usually they couldn't, the point is they couldn't pick the nominee when there was no opponent, no Republican opponent. This was a time when things were very different than they are now.
Not much I can say about that, Ron, other than the fact that that was stupid, very stupid, and extremely discriminatory. And
discriminatory, yes.
And it's nice to know that we have moved beyond that, because there is no reason for that.
Of course. And then George H.W. Bush with the Disabilities Act was a wonderful step, too.
Yeah, and that's certainly, many people remember, that was about 30 years ago, the ADA outlawing discrimination against disabled people. And again, what constitutes a disability and what constitutes a reasonable accommodation? Well, that certainly can be under debate.
Accommodation can be a problem, but disability can be either intellectual or physical. Right. Whether mental or physical.
Right. Things like wheelchair ramps, et cetera, the obvious things. But some of that stuff, it's kind of a gray area. And it certainly is an interesting topic of discussion, which is still, as you would agree, Ron, being debated to this day. But certainly we believe that people should not be discriminated against based upon their demographic. But there shouldn't be any special rights. We should just try to treat people in a reasonable fashion, knowing that our diversity is what makes this country great. And if we thought about that more often and didn't worry about labeling people, I think the world would be a better place.
Of course. Absolutely. Yes.
Ron writes for
Can I bring up an article I want to discuss from my History News Network?
Yes, Ron writes.
The most recent one,
which is very
interesting, from July 2nd, the youngest history makers of the U.S. Senate. And that involves those senators who were 30, not 31, 30 years of age when they became a senator. And there have been five who did in the 20th century, and there were two in the 19th century who were not even 30. They didn't check their age and keep track. So they were actually under 30, as I write about, seven senators. And all but one of them I call quite famous, but it included in modern times Ted Kennedy, of course, was 30. Joe Biden was 30. Robert La Follette Jr., the son of Fighting Bob La Follette of Wisconsin, was 30. Russell Long of Louisiana was 30. And also a senator not as famous, only one term, Rush Holt Sr. of West Virginia. And then in the 19th century, Henry Clay. And also, at the same time, we also had John Henry Eaton of Tennessee, who was involved in a petticoat scandal where his wife and he got married, and there were people claiming that they were cheating while she was still married. So it became the first sex scandal of the presidency.
Hard to imagine, Ron, Joe Biden, the hair-sniffing, dementia-suffering, late 70s person that he is, was 30 years old and one of the youngest legislators around.
He was 2 weeks short of 30 when he got elected. He was actually 30 in November 20th, and he was elected in the beginning of November. So he was not 30 when he was elected. And Rush Holt actually had to wait 6 months because he was 29 and a half for West Virginia when he got elected. So he only served 5.5 years of his only term because he couldn't become senator. But in the 19th century, Henry Clay, very famous, of course, most famous senator of all time, and John Henry Eaton were not actually even 30. They were 28 and 29. So it's just interesting, the youngest senators.
And we'll conclude the show, because it always flies by. Kind of a giggly note here. I just noticed you made a typographical error, Ron, and it's a really funny one. So we're going to go ahead.
Oh, really? Where? On that article?
No, on a different article. We're going to close the show with a jovial note.
So I can change it.
Your blog from June 29th. Mississippi takes major step forward in abandoning Confederate flag. Now, Ron, you know my love for karaoke. And I'm glad to see that you referenced karaoke in this article. You said the Republican governor of Mississippi, Tate Reeves, has made it clear that he will sing the legislation. So does that mean that he's going to sing a song when he signs the bill?
Sign. I see that.
Or is he just going to? Is he maybe going to go to a bar and sing karaoke? What was your intent there? Is he going to sing?
You noticed. I check and double check, but you know we're not perfect unless we're Donald Trump.
So he's going to like go to karaoke as he signs the bill. What were you getting at there?
Well, the point is that they're getting rid of the Confederate flag in Mississippi. In fact, they already took it down, and they're going to come up with a couple of ideas, and they're going to have the people vote on which idea they want to have adopted. But it's come down already in Mississippi, which I think is a good step.
I think that's a good idea, Ron. Whenever a bill is signed, I think that the governor or president should sing. I think Donald Trump, you know, he should sing whenever if he signs another stimulus act. Maybe he should sing "For the Love of Money" by the OJs, an Ohio band. With roots in Ohio.
Well, I've just corrected as we're speaking.
So, you know.
That's funny.
Wouldn't that be cool, though? You know, he could sing Money by Pink Floyd, maybe. Donald probably likes Pink Floyd to match his sort of pink hair. You know, that would kind of match. His hair is kind of a pinkish color. So maybe he could sing Money by Pink Floyd as he signs the legislation for another stimulus. Maybe that would be kind of fun. So, you know, we have fun on the show, Ron, and we make fun of ourselves. Yeah, if you can't laugh at yourself, how can you laugh anything else? Laughter is truly the best medicine.
Before we go, we have a couple of minutes, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me on this. Whatever one thinks about Christopher Columbus, the point is what I heard happened just today, or yesterday actually, this is, you know, on Sunday, is that in Baltimore Harbor in Maryland, there was a Columbus statue, and a mob attacked it and broke it and threw it into the harbor. And I thought, that's outrageous.
Yeah, I saw that, and those people, I make no apologies, Ron. Their rear ends should go in the slammer. I may joke about people not liking Betty White going in the slammer, but those people, they are vandals. They should pay for their damage out of their own pocket, and their rear ends, their tuchuses, that's a good word.
But they broke the statue, so probably it can't be even put in the museum. They destroyed it, not just removed it. And honestly, you're going to like this. Here I agree with Donald Trump. He said anybody who attacks, who breaks or does harm to a statue should get 10 years in prison. I agree.
No disagreement whatsoever, and we'll close the show.
I agree with him on. So it's a short list of a few things I agree.
We'll close the show on an ironic note. Ron agreeing with Don, and Adam agreeing with Don. And As Elmer Fudd said, that's all, folks. Our show has come to a conclusion. Hope you laughed. Hope you smiled. Hope you got a little angry, because that's okay. Controversy is fun. And we thank you again for listening to a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Dr. Ron Fineman. Be sure to listen. Well, I guess you can listen to it if your computer talks, but read, peruse, bookmark. Or if you wish, again, throw a rotten egg and swear at theprogressiveprofessor.com, where he talks about history and politics and Donald and all that good stuff. He's on the History News Network website. And also go to blogtalkradio.com. Look up the Here Be Monsters program. Ron is a regular guest on the panel, which airs on Sunday.
There's no show yesterday, though. It's a week off, yeah.
And be sure to follow Ron on Facebook under theprogressiveprofessor.com. Well, or just the Progressive Professor. But the link to Facebook and the link to hundreds of radio interviews on this station and others appears on the aforementioned website. Thanks again, Ron, for being with us on The Talking Place.
Thank you so much.
WGH1071.com. And last but not least, be sure to use our private email server and send me an email message, or message if you prefer, Adam@WGH1071.com.